This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. From time to time through our lives, our dentists, our general dentists, may recommend a visit to an oral surgeon. They're the specialists to see when our mouths have some kind of defect, have been injured or become diseased. When we think of oral medicine and oral surgery, tooth extraction may be the first thing that comes to mind, but there's much more to the field than that. Listeners, this afternoon, I welcome your questions about oral health and oral medicine for an oral surgeon from Christie Clinic. His name is Dr. Victor Escobar. If you have a question about oral medicine, about oral surgery, give us a call. Here are the phone numbers. In the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use our toll-free number. The toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Dr. Escobar earned his undergraduate degree and his DDS and a PhD from Indiana University. He has been a member of Christie's Department of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery for 5 years. Again, questions for oral surgeon Dr. Victor Escobar are invited. 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. Dr. Escobar, welcome. Thank you so much for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you for inviting me.
You know, when it's time for a cleaning, we'll make an appointment with our dentist. If we've got a sensitive spot, or maybe when we're brushing, we see some bleeding in the gum area, we're going to call the dentist. Are there other things that we should be aware of, that we should be looking for, checking for, that would indicate a visit to the dentist and perhaps ultimately to see someone such as yourself?
Well, you know, normally most people actually don't look in the mouth very often,
right.
You know. And every so often they come and say, look, this just shore up. I think it will be good for people to look in more often. Look for growths, bumps, changes in color.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have ulcers. Of course, those are painful, so people
right.
get to see those. But there are other things that go along. Cancers, for example, are very, very painless. People don't even know they have them. So I think any changes that they see in the mouth will be a good thing to have a dentist check them out.
Oh, okay. What kind of case do you see most often in your practice?
You mean that type of patients?
Yeah.
The majority of our patients, I would say about 50% of the patients that we see come in for routine dental extractions, mainly wisdom teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are usually referred by the dentist or the orthodontist. The other 50% involves a lot of pathology, a lot of cancers, a lot of tumors of the mouth. We see a lot of trauma at Provena through our office. And we have some elective surgeries that we do, mainly reconstructions or defects that have been caused after ablative surgeries by other specialties.
Yeah, very good. Let's talk with a listener who's calling us this afternoon on the road on I-74 from a cell phone. Line one, go ahead.
Hi, I have actually three questions on oral hygiene. I first want to make the comment, just in case not everyone's aware of that, in terms of oral care, that Roger Ebert, who had salivary gland cancer, just reported that it had spread to his jaw, and they had to do surgery on that, and that people need to be really aware of what's going on in their mouths.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The three questions are as follows. One is, I build up a lot of tartar to the extent that I have to go in every 2 months just to get the tartar or the plaque, I never know which is which, cleaned off.
Uh-huh.
And I've used every single mechanical toothbrush that's available.
Are you using some of the electric brushes?
None of them, excuse me?
Are you using some of the electrical brushes?
Yes.
Okay.
And none of them work. And the fancier they are, the less satisfactory they are. And this is what my dentist tells me when I come in. He says, you're paying a lot of money and you're not getting anything out of it.
Yes.
The second thing, I would like your comment on that, because it seems to be related to dietary, the kind of food you eat, whether it's starch. They told me that a lot of Asians and Asian Americans seem to have that buildup from the starches that they consume. The second question is, I have tooth sensitivity.
You have what?
Sensitivity to my teeth. I have tooth Sensodyne. And everybody, and I've called up the other, I've called up NPR sometime, talked to a number of dentists.
Uh-huh.
They all said, don't go anywhere near whiteners, because whiteners are actually taking away part of your tooth cover, and you're going to have problems with it. And the last question,
you mean tooth whitening materials?
Excuse me?
You mean tooth whitening materials?
Yes, they said don't use any whitening materials,
okay.
Don't use any treatments. They just said it's not worth it because
You're
going to end up with, your teeth are very sensitive.
Sure.
And the third thing, I was once diagnosed with TMJ, and that was a very popular thing to operate on a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then it finally turned out, and they sort of diagnosed this by a lack of another diagnosis, was that I had trigeminal neuralgia, and that was causing the pain going down my jaw and across my eye. And could you distinguish for the listener the difference in the symptoms of TMJ and trigeminal neuralgia?
Sure.
Because those are both very serious, but some dentists and some oral surgeons just not aware of distinguishing between them. I think that'd be helpful to people.
Sure.
Thank you.
Why don't we start with the first question about the calculi and the built up on your teeth? You know, as we grow older, the amount of tartar tends to increase in people. That is quite normal, and especially as the mouth gets dry and people take medications, that increases the amount of deposits. And it's not really the deposits, it's just that the saliva function and cleaning that usually occurs with saliva doesn't happen when you're older. So you get to see people like that. And smoking, in particular, is warm, it's hot, and it dries these deposits, which leads me into your second question about diet. Because that's exactly what happens. People have dinner, eat, then they smoke, and that smoke dries things out. That helps the build-up. So in terms of having tartar and having to clean your teeth every 3 months, unfortunately, there are people who do that. And it's normally related not to the diet, but related to the aging process or medications they take, and normally decrease saliva. The diet itself, I don't think, has an effect in terms of increasing calculi deposit. I think there are other things that can happen. And one of them, like I said, is being smoking. The third question is tooth sensitivity. And, of course, age has a lot to do with it. Brushing techniques have a lot to do with it, because the gingiva tends to recede down from the crown into the roots of the teeth. When that happens, there is a band of the root that gets exposed, and that band is actually very sensitive. It's not covered by enamel, and that has nerve endings, and dentin and cementum is very sensitive at touch. So for that reason, a lot of people develop this sensitivity. There are toothpaste that can be used for that. There are medications the dentist could use. Dentists can actually apply some type of cements they have to cover this area, even some varnishes. And there are multiple materials now that the dentist can actually apply to reduce that sensitivity. All they are doing is actually covering this exposed root with a new material, and that way sensitivity can be decreased. In terms of the whitening, I think, is very popular nowadays. People white, you know, use these teeth whitening materials. I think, and this is my personal opinion, that it will be, and please notice this, that I do not this procedure in my offices. I don't do this, but my impression is that it will be better to have a dentist direct the patient on the way to do this proper. You can buy over the counter a lot of materials. And the problem with that is that people tend to think that a little bit is good, a whole bunch of it is better. So you're right. It tends to wear enamel away. It tends to cause problems. So my recommendation to this is actually don't go to the market and buy yourself this material. Actually go to a dentist and have it prescribed to you and instructed in the proper use. And probably it would be better to have the in-office procedure done by a dentist. Okay. In terms of the last one,
DMJ,
you asked how to differentiate those two. And it's interesting that you point this out because very common, I see in my office and my practice, patients that are referred with what is called temporomandibular joint problems. And the problem is that there are a series of patients that also have facial pain, which is atypical pain. And trigeminal neuralgia is actually a very specific type of pain. It has to do with one of the cranial nerves in the face and the sensitivity of the face, and it's very specific. TMJ is a very generalized dysfunction. Muscles are painful. There is no trigger points. In trigeminal neuralgia, on the other hand, there is a trigger point. The pain is specific. It's a burning type of pain. And we call it traveling pain because that pain travels through the branches of the nerve. But the interesting thing is that you stimulate the pain travels and it stops. What TMJ doesn't. With temporomandibular joint pain, the pain stays there and is dull in nature.
Okay, very good. This caller raises a question in my mind. As you mentioned earlier, you say as we age, our overall dental health might suffer because of the changes in the aging process. And, you know, more and more of us are going to keep our teeth into old age.
It's happening.
Yes. But, you know, as you said, medicines may impact teeth and gums and the amount of saliva we produce. What can we do if that's going on? Would you recommend having a glass of water at your side and just occasionally, you know, as you drink some water, rinsing your mouth? Would that help?
Well, yes, it does help having the increased amount of water. I think what is important to realize is that there are medicines, high blood pressure medications, just to give an example, but not all of them do it. So if one of them is actually causing the dryness, maybe there is a potential of using a different type of medication that may not do that.
Okay.
And that can be a way to do it. The physician who is controlling, who is prescribing this medication may be able to prescribe a separate type of medication and exchange that. In the practice, I sometimes find patients who come with this dry mouth, and I either prescribe a medication that will increase saliva production, or I ask the physician to try another medication for pain, if possible.
Yeah. Are there side effects to prescription medicines to increase saliva flow? Or is it a pretty safe medication?
You know, the risks are like in any other medication. There is no single medication that doesn't have side effects. All of the medications that we use, we call them safe because we had acceptable side effects. And no, I don't think that will be a fair question, a fair answer to say that it's safe. Completely.
Okay. But we know what the risks are and we're willing to weigh them and either say, I'm willing to do that or I'll go another route.
Yes. I usually do that with my patients, especially with the pilocarpine, which is one of the medications we use to increase saliva.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Oral surgeon Dr. Victor Escobar is our guest this afternoon here on the program. He is in the Department of Oral Surgery at Christie Clinic in Champaign. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, if you have questions about oral medicine, oral surgery, give us a call, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. When I was an adolescent, which was some time ago now.
Not too long.
You're very kind. It was assumed one would have one's wisdom teeth extracted. Is that the practice today?
Pretty much. I find out that a large percentage of the patients have the wisdom teeth extracted for two reasons. One, orthodontics has actually moved it out.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is not enough room to get the teeth in the right place, well, it is only logical to remove a tooth that will not be visible in the mouth and will not change the aesthetic. The second is, if a tooth is impacted, which is what normally happens with wisdom teeth, the potential for the complications to strike this tooth when you are 35 and older increases tremendously. And the major complication being the fractures of the mandible, problems with the alveolar nerve, or even tumors and cysts that develop.
Really?
Because these are embryonic tissues that are in a place that are not supposed to be.
Interesting.
So, yes, that's the major practice today.
Yeah. Now, are there cases where people have a perfectly fine set of third molars and you say, leave them alone?
Again, personally, I do.
Yeah,
I do. I tell people,
yeah.
You know,
you don't need to worry about that.
I make my living taking teeth out, but I don't think you need to have your teeth out.
Yeah. What conditions do you see in younger patients that call for the skills of an oral surgeon?
One of the things I did this week, last Wednesday, orthognathic surgery. There are children that come with major facial malformations.
Mm-hmm.
And we need, in a sense, advance the face, advance the mandible. So we need to actually detach bones and move bones around to give it more functional, mm-hmm. as well as cosmetic appearance and overall function, because those children are not able to chew. Cleft lip, cleft palate children, mm-hmm. Children who had developmental disorders in which they had delayed teeth eruptions. There are serious, and it's a large number of tumors that occur in children and don't happen in adults. And these tumors and cysts that we see have to be taken out. Otherwise, they'll grow and cause more problems. So there's a lot of pathology that needs to be done.
How aware are our general practitioners, our pediatricians, of conditions involving the mouth, the jaw, the tongue, the whole apparatus, in terms of making a diagnosis or making a call to someone like yourself and saying, I've got a patient here, I think you should see this individual?
Are you speaking about general dentist, general pediatric dentist, or you're talking about regular
physician? I'm talking about a regular physician. I know that that's always part of an examination. Mm-hmm. The physician looks into your mouth. But I'm wondering, how good are they at spotting problems early in the going?
My experience has been that from the dentist point of view, pediatric dentists and general dentists or other specialists in dentistry, they're pretty good. They know what's going on. Physicians are also very good. They may not quite know exactly what needs to be done, but again, that's what the specialties are for. But I found out that most of the pediatricians are always aware of all these anomalies. They see the children often. Pediatrics is one of those specialties in which they see the child on and on routinely. So they are pretty aware of changes. And the same thing with internal medicine, family practice doctors. They're pretty aware. They do a very good job. I work for Christie Clinic, and one of my main referral bases is actually the physicians within the mm-hmm. Christie Clinic. So I do have quite a lot of them referred to me.
Yeah. You mentioned children with abnormalities, and they might need surgery for function and for how they look. What is the state of the art now for doing that? I mean, how much function can you give a child who has severe abnormalities? How much function can you give? How can you make them look like a regular kid, which is what every kid wants?
I think, you know, to tell you the truth, last Wednesday is probably one of my, the times I've done the best answering that question. I have a 17-year-old girl who actually, her lower teeth were about close to an inch in front of her upper teeth. And she didn't have she got completely obstruction of the nasal passages mm-hmm. because of the maxilla being so small. The orthodontist I work with in these cases, she did an excellent job expanding the mandible, expanding the maxilla, and rearranging. This girl was referred initially to us because her primary doctor thought that the stomach problems she was having is because she couldn't chew her food.
Yeah.
So functional, she was completely non-functional and couldn't breathe. So her doctor was also concerned with the sleep apnea and all of that. Very disturbing, very difficult for this girl. We did the surgery. We advanced the maxilla, state of the art. The surgeries we do today were created about 10, 15 years ago. So they are not old techniques. And we use titanium as the materials that we use to support all these tissues. We use the screws, we use some plates. The same material that we use for hips and knees.
Knees, yeah.
And fingers. So it's pretty much up to date. We had very good success with those. And if you were to see this particular girl that I'm thinking of, the personalities change.
Yeah.
The whole attitude to life, everything changes. It's quite interesting.
It's wonderful for her and her family, and it must be very rewarding
for
you.
We did a cleft palate, a 40-year-old woman from Kankakee. Has never been done, you know. She's 42 years old, cleft lip, cleft palate, and here we accomplished that. I saw her this morning. She's doing wonderful.
Yeah. So the 17-year-old girl, you know, our mouths, with the rest of us, you know, grow. Mm-hmm. I don't know when is the appropriate time to do that kind of surgery, because I would think you'd kind of want to have most of the facial structure in place so that you could work with it.
It is timing is very essential in the success of the surgeries. If you do it too early, it will fail and it will have to be done again. So we have usually a way to determine how much growth is left on them by doing bone analysis that we do. And normally on a girl, we can get by about 16, 17. In boys, we have to wait a little longer, about a year or two later, because boys tend to grow a little farther.
18, 19.
Yeah. So yeah. Boys are a little later than girls. But it's timed. And the problem is trying to understand for these patients, they had to do this and, you know, wait.
Yeah, it must have been very hard for that girl to wait.
It is. It is. You know, and I have quite a few of them. We don't, in the last year, maybe 20 of them. So it's pretty good.
Yeah. Here's a general kind of dentistry question. Mm-hmm. I know you're an oral surgeon, and that's our topic today.
That's all right.
But when should parents seek the first dental consultation for a child?
You know, that goes back to when I was in dental school, you know, and that's a question that we used to be asked. I think it's important that the child see a dentist as early as possible. I think before the permanent dentition comes in, I think a child 3 or 4 years old should be brought to a dentist and have a dentist examine the mouth to ensure there is no any problems developing. Mm. And I think that's about the age I recommend.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about this young woman who you worked on, you operated on last week, was
mm-hmm.
it? What is the aftercare picture like? I remember years ago, a friend of mine, his wife underwent surgery on her jaw, and her jaws were wired closed for a long period of time.
We try not to do that anymore.
I know. But so where are we in terms of the what happens after surgery? What's the aftercare like?
You know, it depends on the surgeon and depends on what you are doing. In some cases, it's longer and shorter. But as a rule, at least when I do this, the patient goes to the operating room, 6 hours operation. I ask the patients to stay in the coronary care unit, in the intensive care unit overnight for airway protection. Next morning, they get discharged from the hospital. They go home. I try not to have the mouth wired. They function.
Mm-hmm.
And like any other fracture, every time you break a bone, and the same thing for face fractures every time I do them, it takes about 6 weeks before the bones get back to normal. Healing process takes that long, so the patients will be on a soft diet. And that's about the main thing that happens. There is not that much more care that needs to be done. You know, wound care, but nothing like that.
Yeah.
They are very functional in about a week.
Yeah, well, that's a great improvement yeah. from years ago
yeah,
when people
week.
Had to be on liquid diets for weeks at
well,
a time.
Well, they have to be on a soft diet.
Soft diet, yeah, but that's
but
different.
But the first week is a liquid diet.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. soups and...
Yeah.
yeah. Okay.
We have a lot of booklets that we have today. There's some kits that we give them with recipes that we use for people who have fractures.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a book of maybe 200 recipes that we can provide them with.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is an oral surgeon from Christie Clinic. His name is Dr. Victor Escobar. He earned his undergraduate degree, his DDS, and his PhD from Indiana University, and he's been a member of Christie's Department of Oral Surgery for 5 years. Listeners, if you've got a question about oral health and oral medicine, oral surgery, you can give us a call and talk to the doctor. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, we've been talking a little bit about younger people. Let's go back to our mouths as we age, and let's talk about folks with dentures.
Okay.
As we age, even if we have dentures and we've had them for a long time, our mouths, the bone can, what would you say, diminish?
Well, no, the reason we have bone in the mouth really is because we have teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And once we take the teeth out, that functional, remember we talk about function, that functional bone disappears. So people end with very hypertrophic mandibles, very small mandibles, and as a result, they are not able to wear the dentures.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of elderly people who their dentures don't
function. Don't fit anymore, yeah.
So, interestingly enough, I think you were asking about the state of the art before. Implants have solved that issue. We do a lot of implants. We can place a couple of implants on a person, and a general dentist can then fit a denture that is supported by these implants. So if that denture will not move around, people function extremely well. It's a very successful procedure
mm-hmm.
with high degree of success and something that has been in the market for 40 years. But 40 years ago, my partner has patients that he put implants 40 years ago and they're still in the mouth. So it's something that has become more popular as the prices have been
yeah.
more acceptable.
Who's a good candidate for an implant like that?
I'm very selective in when I do this. Mainly I like to have healthy people. There are certain conditions that I keep away from. I do a very thoroughly medical interview on these patients to ensure that they don't have something that's going to interfere with healing. But conditions that interfere with healing, we are very careful in determining what degree of the disease is. Diabetes is one of them. Also people who smoke, I try to tell them that they don't make smoke-resistant implants. They have to be able to be careful with that. So I think, in general, most people are candidates. Children are not. Children, we have to wait until they finish growing, 17, 18. And elderly and very sick people, I don't recommend it because the return for a very invasive procedure is not there. And if they are very sick, they won't be able to take care of them. I'm not the type of person who will not be able to, who I don't recommend implants are those who cannot take care of keeping them clean. Because you have to maintain them. Otherwise, they fail.
What's involved in maintaining an implant?
Implants function today as a natural tooth. They are the closest we have come to a natural tooth. And I tell patients that anything that can happen to a tooth can happen to an implant, except for the cavities. So they need to floss them, we need to brush them, we need to clean them, we need to maintain them like they would maintain them out.
Okay, so that is then why smoking can have an impact on an implant.
Correct.
Besides implants, is there a way to build up jawbone?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. That is also done, and we use both autogenous bone, meaning we can take bones from hips, from knees, tibia, some other places in the body, to build, or ribs, actually, to build this bone. Or there are companies that actually specialize in providing this type of materials for surgeons and use cadaver bone. I use a mixture most times.
Yeah. People with dentures, I would suspect that some folks stop going to the dentist after they get their dentures. Is that true?
You are absolutely right. And, you know, the interesting part is that I say, when was the last time you saw a dentist? You look at the dentures and the dentures haven't been brushed. You know, they put them in the mouth, they don't brush them. There are a lot of people who think that because they have dentures, they don't have to go back. And the danger of that is that if you have a tumor growing in that denture, you will never know it. People use the adhesives to put them in place. And, of course, those mask anything that is happening. People end with severe yeast infections and all these gooey materials. So, no, you're absolutely right. People think, okay, I don't have teeth, I don't have to do anything.
That's something I don't have to worry about anymore.
Yes.
But you do need to worry about that. In terms of the caller that we had talked about, Roger Ebert, and having surgery now on his jaw, what's the situation for folks who have had a tumor and it's resulted in disfigurement in order to excise the tumor? What's the outlook for rebuilding?
Again, things have changed from the past. And it was very common that a person came in and had a mandible resection just to pick apart. And they took the bone out, and the people ended with no lower jaw and completely disfigured. And then a few months later, they went back and tried to build that up. The ones here, and the way we do it normally is if you need to take a bone or you need to do that kind of radical surgery, we normally placed a plate, titanium plates, that are already preformed in the shape of a mandible. And they are not replacing the bone, but we can actually keep the person from having the complete disfigurement that you're talking about. I have patients that I've done that, they don't look like they actually had the bone out after surgery, and they have had a major surgery procedure. So I think it's important that the surgeon talks to whoever is going to reconstruct this after the removal of the tumor and the reconstruction stage, so the patient doesn't get that disfigured. Besides that, it's a lot easier
to do it
to
all.
Go back yeah. there, and although the disagreement is should we put bone on it or not at this time, I think you can wait on the bone, but at least you have the tissue, the soft tissues that don't disappear if you can do it immediately.
Yeah.
But it's done now, and it's very good. Yeah. I think the process is done very good.
Yeah. Well, my first, you know, my first inclination would be to think about the aesthetics of it, but as you talked about earlier with the 17-year-old girl, function is a big issue, and if you can't get, you know, you can't get your nutrition in, that can lead to problems. And in her case, she was having reflux. Is that it?
So, well, her main problem was stomach. Yeah. That's what she was brought in for.
Yeah,
that's her primary doctor.
Yeah, maybe you could talk with us a little bit about how these problems, how oral disease in general can affect overall health.
Yes. You know, let's start with the elderly. Not having teeth that fit, people take them off, so therefore they cannot eat properly. So the diet changes, and you see a lot of the elderly who come in with severe anemias. I look at them out and can tell this is some sort of anemia just by looking at the tissues. B12 deficiencies are really easy to spot. And so, yes, elderly is a good example of why you can have diet-producing problems. In terms of children that have, like this young lady, cannot keep anything in her stomach, cannot chew the food, she can not only have the deficiencies, lack of growth, arrested development, she also have a vitamin deficiency that can be quite severe. And then you have the children with genetic defects who don't have the ability to intake. Phenylketonuria is a good example. You know, they have to be limited as to what they take for now. Otherwise, mental retardation occurs.
Mm. Given the challenges for caring for people who are older, they might be living in a nursing home. They might be homebound. I'm wondering, is there currently a specialty within the field of dentistry for caring for those kinds of patients, geriatric dentistry?
Yes, there is. We don't have a recognized specialty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like being a prosthodontist or a pathologist. But yes, there is a specialty. People, they have fellowships all over the country in which people actually go in and do a fellowship on 1 or 2 years on geriatric dentistry or general hospital dentistry. So there are dentists. And there is one here in town who actually visits the nursing homes and actually goes to see elderly people.
Hmm. What lies ahead as the nation's elderly population grows?
The best thing that's happening is that these people have been able to, like you said, keep the teeth. It's not like the older generations of elderly. The new ones, they have all the teeth. They are 80 years old, and they have all of the teeth. The numbers have changed tremendously. Even in my office, as I see this, I see half of the elderly that had a full complement of teeth, healthy mouths. And they themselves are healthy. So I think the outlook and the future is that we will have a lot of healthy mouths and a lot of elderly with a lot of teeth to look at, and I think that's good.
Mm. So the elderly that come to you and are sitting in your office, they have their teeth. In general, they're in pretty good health. Why are they in your office?
Well, see, again, this happens, the problems that you have when you are young versus what happens when you're old. When you're young, you have a lot of cavities. When you're old, you have periodontal disease. So you have your bone loss.
Mm-hmm.
When you are young, you don't break your teeth. When you're old, you tend to fracture your teeth by just the fracture. So some of these unfortunate people happen to fracture their tooth overnight. They go to the dentist, and the dentist says, I cannot restore this tooth anymore. Or they wear the teeth. The teeth wear off. You know, attrition. They wear completely off, and the pulp gets exposed. The nerve of the tooth gets exposed. They need root canal therapies. And sometimes it doesn't work. And then you have a lot of people with cancer. I see quite a lot of them that have cancer, and we need to extract teeth prior to radiation or for radiation therapy or because the cancer involves the areas.
Hmm. How many, what proportion of the population is going to develop some kind of oral cancer?
You know, I don't know a number exactly.
Yeah.
I really don't.
And how?
But about 10%,
yeah,
I would say. That
how important is early detection, early diagnosis, and treatment early?
Very important.
Yeah.
Like in the rest of the body, there are areas in the mouth that are more prone to a more aggressive tumor than others. A cancer on the cheek inside is not as aggressive as a cancer on the lower lip, vermilion. Or cancer on the upper lip is not as bad as the cancer on the lower lip. The lower lip is probably one of the most aggressive. So it's very important that we, Dr. Schultz and Dr. Akram and Chaudhry, who are the oncologists that I work with, they are very aggressive when they see lips because they would like for us to go ahead and treat them immediately and do all the studies.
Hmm. Well, a couple of things pop into my mind right now. Regular checkups, good oral hygiene, and I guess if you're a smoker, quit.
Yes.
Are there other things that we can do to prevent oral cancer?
One that many, not too many people think of is sunlight. Because farmers or people who work outdoors had a high incidence of cancer of the lower lip. It's just directly and sunlight, and that's when most of the cancers of the lower lip come from.
Okay, so some kind of
protection,
some kind of gel or chapstick or something
with sunscreen.
Okay,
and a hat.
Okay, let's talk with a listener.
All right,
in Charleston, line 4. Hi.
Hi. I just recently heard something about being concerned about toxicity from fillings. I don't know if I can't pronounce the word amalgam.
Amalgam.
Yeah. mercury.
Yes, mercury.
Is there, how much should we be concerned about that?
It is a topic of high discussion among dentists and about groups that are concerned with natural products.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you both sides of the story, okay?
Okay.
From the point of view of the natural use of foods or natural products and non-toxicity, the concern is that the amalgams are an alloy made out of mercury and that the mercury is toxic to the brain, and therefore you will have a series of neurological defects. Some of those people even said that the mercury in your body can produce yeast infections.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, a lot of the patients go to the dentist and request the fillings to be removed and replaced with the white tooth color material, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, which had created a nice area for cosmetic dentistry. And of course, it's more cosmetic procedures, okay? Functional as well. And excellent treatment. I'm not saying that's the bad treatment to do, okay? But then it comes the position of the American Dental Association. And the American Dental Association have not been able to prove that in fact, all the claims that have been made against amalgam are true. They are not able to measure levels of mercury. Haven't been able to prove that the mercury is toxic to the body. The alloys have been used since the 1860s, and we don't have any of those side effects that have been claimed to have happened. So the American Dental Association does not sanction those claims and does not sanctioned and said that all the fillings should be removed and replaced with tooth-colored material.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's pretty safe. The position of the American Dental Association is that the amalgam is very safe.
Okay, so it's the older fillings that are the concern?
No, not at all.
No?
There hasn't been even that as a claim.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, we're welcome.
Thanks for the call. And should we try one more call? Let's try one more call. Gibson City, line one, but we'll have to keep it brief because we're straying past our time here a little bit this afternoon, but I do want to get another caller in. Line one, hi.
Yes, I was wondering about Fosamax. I've taken it for 6 years, and I hear there can be a problem with the jawbone deteriorating.
Okay, good question.
It's actually one of the most interesting topics nowadays. Also, is very controversial, and the problem is what we call the bisphosphonate therapy. There are three compounds in the market, and one of them being Fosamax. There is a concern that Fosamax actually calcifies the bone to such a stage that eliminates all the blood vessels that provide vitality and the healing power to the bone. As a result, that bone doesn't heal as well as bone on people who had not taken Fosamax. But one thing we have to keep in mind is that it's not really the bisphosphonates in the oral medications that are more important. It's the bisphosphonates that are used for chemotherapy. Those are the ones that really have caused the major problems. So one has to be conscious that although there is a risk, that risk is very minimum with the oral treatment. And, of course, you're talking Fosamax as being the treatment for osteoporosis. But the chemotherapy by bisphosphonates, those are the ones that we have to worry about rather than the Fosamax.
Okay. There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Dr. Escobar, thank you very much for
joining us
this afternoon.
Thank you for inviting me.
Dr. Victor Escobar is an oral surgeon with Christie Clinic in Champaign.